No greater difference could be imagined than existed between the man on the bed and the slim, neat figure who sat by his side. John Millinborn, broad-shouldered, big-featured, a veritable giant in frame, and even in his last days suggesting the enormous strength which had been his in his prime, had been an outdoor man, a man of large voice and large capable hands. James Kitson had been a student from his youth up, and had spent his manhood in musty offices, stuffy courts, surrounded by crackling briefs and calf-bound law-books. Yet between these two men, the millionaire shipbuilder and the successful solicitor, utterly different in their tastes and their modes of life, was a friendship deep and true. Strange that death should take the strong and leave the weak, so thought James Kitson as he watched his friend. "I'll do what can be done, John. You leave a great responsibility upon the girl, a million and a half of money." The sick man nodded. "I get rid of a greater one, Jim. When my father died, he left 100,000 between us, my sister and I. I've turned my share into 1,000,000, but that is by the way. Because she was a fairly rich girl and a willful girl, Jim, she broke her heart. Because they knew she had the money, the worst men were attracted to her, and she chose the worst of the worst." He stopped speaking to get his breath. "She married a plausible villain who ruined her, spent every sou, and left her with a mountain of debt and a month-old baby. Poor Grace died, and he married again. I tried to get the baby, but he held it as a hostage. I could never trace the child after it was 2 years old. It was only a month ago I learnt the reason. The man was an international swindler, and was wanted by the police. He was arrested in Paris, and charged in his true name. The name he had married in was false. When he came out of prison, he took his own name, and of course the child's name changed, too." The lawyer nodded. "You want me to get the will proved, and begin your search for Oliver Prédeaux. There is no such person. The girl's name you know, and I have told you where she's living. You'll find nobody who knows Oliver Prédeaux. Her father disappeared when she was 6. He's probably dead. And her stepmother brought her up without knowing her relationship to me. Then she died, and the girl has been working ever since she was 15. She is not to be found? Until she's married, watch her, Jim. Spend all the money you wish. Don't influence her unless you see she is getting the wrong kind of man." His voice, which had grown to something of the old strength, suddenly dropped, and the great head rolled sideways on the pillow. Kitson rose and crossed to the door. It opened upon a spacious sitting-room, through the big open windows of which could be seen the broad acres of the Sussex Weald. A man was sitting in the window-seat, chin in hand, looking across to the checkered fields on the slope of the downs. He was a man of 30, with a pointed beard, and he rose as the lawyer stepped quickly into the room. "Anything wrong?" he asked. "I think he has fainted. Will you go to him, doctor?" The young man passed swiftly and noiselessly to the bedside and made a brief examination. From a shelf near the head of the bed he took a hypodermic syringe and filled it from a small bottle. Bearing the patient's side, he slowly injected the drug. He stood for a moment looking at the unconscious man, then came back to the big hall where James Kitson was waiting. "Well?" The doctor shook his head. "'Tis difficult to form a judgment," he said quietly. "His heart is all gone to pieces. Has he a family doctor?" "Not so far as I know. He hated doctors, and never has been ill in his life. I wonder he tolerated you." Dr. Van Heerden smiled. "He couldn't help himself. He was taken ill in the train on the way to this place, and I happened to be a fellow passenger. He asked me to bring him here, and I have been here ever since. It is strange," he added, "that so rich a man as Mr. Millinborn had no servant travelling with him, and should live practically..."